Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome. This is a new experience for me, and I so appreciate Kathy and George's well-honed assistance. I'll be talking about the cinematic portrayal of faith today, and a great way to begin this morning is with the song Tomorrow from the popular musical Annie. And whether on stage or cinema, this upbeat song evokes a strong, positive faith in the future. Although you're muted, please feel free to sing along.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin and grin.
That's such a powerful, hopeful song, isn't it? So with that positive note, let me begin. So I must admit that during the pandemic, I've been more prone to sit behind my Samsung TV and veg out on movies, either on Netflix, Tubi, or Disney Plus. Unfortunately, I fall into a deep coma near the end of the movie. But with this newfangled technology, I can luckily scroll back to the parts I missed. So during the Christmas season, I began to load up on Holiday Fare, Scrooge, Miracle on 34th Street, It's a Wonderful Life, you name it, I watched it. And it was about that time I began to notice how these cinematic wonders considered the concept of faith. Now, whether in Todd A.O., VistaVision, Panavision, or just plain old scratchy black and white, Hollywood, or the more adventurous independent film companies, have dealt with a matter of faith. You've seen it on TV, haven't you? Charlie Brown wants Lucy to tee the football so he can kick a make-believe field goal. He has faith that she will hold that ball true and steady. But that faith is denied when Lucy pulls it away, causing Charlie Brown to slip, fall, and lose his faith all at the same time. But of course, he continues to hope. He continues to have faith. What do you have faith in? Was your faith denied? Was the ball pulled away from you? Did you move on to believe in something else that made more sense to you? Or did you hold on to that faith, come hell or high water? In this talk, I will be considering faith as it is explained in the cinema. We will look at movies from a number of genres to see how they explain faith and belief. I began to notice some interesting things. Faith in science, faith in God, faith in myth, faith in our institutions. Oh, and let's not forget, faith in the power of love. We'll be looking at how the movie industry deals with faith by flying on a rebel X-wing fighter, visiting a broken-down Catholic school, sitting in the marble U.S. Senate balcony, or riding on a magic train to the North Pole. So join me as we stroll down that yellow brick road to consider how film looks at faith. Well, let's start out with a theme found in many films throughout the years, faith in the Christian God. You might think that I would go straight to Ben-Hur, a spectacular Technicolor extravaganza directed by William Wyler in 1959. I first saw this movie dressed in pajamas at the drive-in movie. I slept through most of it, waking up when a storm washed the blood of Christ down what was once a dry riverbed. However, I'm going back to an older movie that some of you may have seen. Did you ever watch the 1945 film, The Bells of St. Mary's? I love to watch Sister Superior Mary Benedict, played by Ingrid Bergman, clash with Father O'Malley, a parish priest, portrayed by Bing Crosby. Sister Mary runs a broken down inner city Catholic school on the verge of being condemned. The roof leaks, the pipes are broken. Bad news. Father O'Malley must decide whether or not to close the school and send the children and the nuns packing. But Sister Mary has faith that if she and the other nuns pray often, God will work on rich businessman Horace B. Bogardus to help them solve their dilemma. Surely, they believe, God will change Mr. Bogardus' heart, convincing him to donate his newly constructed building, which just happens to be a block away from the broken-down school. Miraculously, Mr. Bogardus becomes convinced that if he donates the building to the children, his failing heart will be strengthened and God will look favorably upon him. The Sisters of St. Mary's had faith that God can move mountains, or at least Mr. Bogardus. And so believed the East German nuns in a small, rundown Arizona parish in the 1963 movie Lilies of the Field, produced and directed by Ralph Nelson and starring Sidney Poitier. The hard-headed sister Mother Maria believes the power of prayer will move Homer Smith, an itinerant jack-of-all-trades, played by Poitier, to build their chapel, without the benefit of being paid. Not one cent, not even medical benefits. And you guessed it, God came through with flying colors. The chapel, as Sister Maria would say in her Germanic accent, would rise, not only with Homer's help, but with the local good-hearted parishioners. Amen. Sister Maria and Sister Mary Benedict have a deep faith in the Christian God, but they could never boast that they have actually seen him in person. In the 1977 movie, Oh God, directed by Carl Reiner, God, portrayed by George Burns, meets with and convinces Jerry, a grocery store assistant manager, to be his modern day Moses and to spread the word that he believes in the human race. Jerry Landers, played by John Denver, tries to convince his wife and the world that he has actually spoken to God. His wife, Bobby, played by Terry Garr, thinks he's crazy. But when he asks her if she believes in him, Bobby consoles him by saying, well, I believe that you believe. But let's shift gears from God driving a taxi cab to rebel superheroes piloting starships and X-wing fighters as we consider another kind of religious faith. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, we are introduced to a faith in the connective energy of the universe. In Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, director George Lucas introduces us to what is known as the Force, a spiritual bipolar connective presence. There is a famous scene where the old Jedi Knight, Obi-Wan Kenobi, played by Alec Guinness, explains the Force to young Luke Skywalker. Obi-Wan tells Luke, played by Mark Hamill, that the Force is an energy field created by all living things. He adds that the Force surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. In the Star Wars prequel, we learn that this presence can only be tapped into if you're specially chosen to do so. And you must have absolute faith in that Force, become a beneficiary of its extraordinary powers. If you have faith in the Force, whichever the side of the coin you choose, you can become a superhero or a supervillain. You can levitate X-wing starships, control the thoughts of stormtroopers, or even communicate telepathically. It's interesting to note that Han Solo, the smuggler who pilots the Millennium Falcon and who helps Luke and the Rebel Resistance, believes the Force is an ancient superstitious nonsense. However, by Episode 6, Han, played by Harrison Ford, becomes a true believer. In Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, a slight forest green creature known as Yoda helps Luke become a master Jedi warrior. He instructs the young apprentice that feeling calm, passive, and at peace is a sure sign that you have tapped into the good side of the Force. And of course, as many of you know, Luke's father, Darth Vader, taps into the dark side of the Force. He is the yang to Luke's yin. In the Star Wars series, you find a strong lack of faith in government. The distrust of the corrupt galactic empire is central to the rebel cause. However, you will discover a number of films portraying a strong faith in our institutions, especially in the 1940s. Frank Capra is one of my favorite motion picture directors, and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is one of my favorite Oscar-winning movies that hit the theaters in 1939. It serves as a great portrayal of faith in human institutions. A 30-year-old Jimmy Stewart plays Jefferson Smith, an idealistic young man that winds up appointed to the United States Senate. As the movie progresses, you realize that Senator Smith has a very unwavering faith in democracy and the federal government. Let me set the stage for you. A senator from Smith's state dies unexpectedly. The remaining senator, along with the governor and the party boss, appoint him as a replacement, basically because they believe he's naive and can be easily manipulated to be a part of their corrupt political machine. Now, Jean Arthur, who plays Smith's cynical but personable secretary, Clarissa Saunders, warns Smith that his innocent faith in government is misplaced. Smith painfully discovers on his own many of the shortcomings of the political process. As his first Senate bill to acquire land for a national boys' camp leads to a conflict with party boss Jim Taylor. Taylor wants that land to build a dam and to line his pockets. He, as well as the crooked Senator Payne, first try to corrupt Smith, and then, as the movie progresses, attempt to destroy his career through a made-up scandal loaded with lies. Smith fights back and filibusters at the Senate chambers. His passionate words ring true, in a famous sequence near the end of the movie where he states that in a democracy, there's no place for graft or greed or lies or compromise with human liberties. Eventually, crooked Senator Payne fesses up to the big lie, vindicating Senator Smith. As with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you will find the cinematic portrayal of faith in human institutions in another one of Frank Capra's movies, It's a Wonderful Life, also starring James Stewart. The institution in this case is the Modest Building and Loan Company, which helps many poor Bedford Falls townfolk to afford a home. But let's leave Bedford Falls to board a magical locomotive headed for the North Pole. On our trip, we will explore the belief in myth, another theme that shows up on DVDs, VCRs, and theaters, especially during the holiday season. So do you believe in Santa Claus? There are a great number of motion pictures showing cynical disbelievers who finally come to recant and restore their past belief in old Saint Nick. In the 2004 movie, The Polar Express, voiced by Tom Hanks, Hero Boy embarks on a journey of faith on a magical train that restores his waning belief in the big guy. In one sequence, the boy meets Hobo, the Polar Express ghost, playing Good King Wenceslas on a hurdy-gurdy. Hobo is aware of the boy's skepticism about Santa and knows that he doesn't want to be bamboozled, conned, or railroaded. In a later sequence, the conductor tells the boy that although sometimes seeing is believing, that sometimes the most real things in the world are the things we can't see. When the young boy receives the first gift of Christmas near the end of the movie, Santa tells him that the true spirit of Christmas lies in your heart. In the end, Hero Boy's faith in Santa is restored, and he can once again hear the ringing of the Christmas bells. His belief is restored, his youthful innocence preserved. As with many cinematic treatments throughout the years, lack of faith in Santa is a sign of losing the child inside of us as a result of the inexorable move toward adolescence and adulthood. This theme can also be witnessed in A Miracle on 34th Street. In this 1947 motion picture, Doris Walker, played by Maureen O'Hara, tells her lawyer beau, played by John Payne, that faith is believing in something that common sense tells you could not possibly be true. Should little Susan Walker have faith that Kris Kringle is real? Slip that DVD in the slot and find out. Now, if Hero Boy and Susan Walker come to believe in the spirit of Christmas, it follows naturally that they have faith in the power of love, a theme repeated in many motion pictures. In his 1969 movie, The Learning Tree, Gordon Parks shows how faith in the power of love and truth can help Blacks cope with and bring about a transformation to the prejudice that was so prevalent during the time. Gordon Parks' perspective on the difficulties African Americans faced during the 1920s still ring true as we witness major political figures pay homage to those who would rather America be a nation for white Caucasians only. At the very start of the movie, Parks opens with a sequence where Newt, an African-American teen, played by Kyle Johnson, is enjoying a beautiful spring day when a tornado strikes unexpectedly. This scene symbolizes the hardship faced by African-Americans during this time. Newt is that fellow on the left. Now, Newt, or Winger, as his friends call him, enjoys life, family, and love, but there are tornadoes of racism ready to strike unexpectedly and with evil ferocity in Cherokee Flats, Kansas. Danger lurks behind every tree, and the possibility of death is always on his mind. While walking home from town on an old dirt road, Newt confides to his mother, Sarah, played by Estelle Evans, that he is afraid of the racial friction in their hometown and the possibility of death. Sarah tells him he should be ready when the time comes. Newt assumes she's talking about being a Christian, but Sarah explains, well, in a way, but there's more to it than that. It's being able to love when you feel like hating, to tell the truth when you feel like lying. As the story progresses, Newt pays heed to Sarah's sage advice, choosing to follow love and truth as he faces the hardships of racial animosity during that time. Now, finally, for those of you who are fans of Carl Sagan and Cosmos, there are a number of more recent movies about faith and science that might interest you, especially one based on a book written by Carl Sagan. In the 1997 science fiction movie Contact, Dr. Eleanor Arroway, played by Jodie Foster, exemplifies faith in science. Ellie, or Sparks, as her deceased father called her, follows the tenets of science to find out if we are the only intelligent beings in the galaxy. As her father once told her, if it's just us, seems like an awful waste of space. Eventually, Ellie does find a strong alien signal from the Vega system. Not only do the aliens broadcast prime numbers, but eventually they send out how-to plans for a transport system so that one human can experience a close encounter of the third kind. Would you go? Ellie wants to go, but a government panel decides she wouldn't be a good representative for humankind since she is an atheist, and 65% of Earthlings believe in God. But after the first transport system is blown up by a radical right-wing Christian, she is able to hop on a duplicate transport system built by friend and billionaire S.R. Hayden of Hayden Industries. On this alien ship, Ellie eventually bounces from one wormhole to another with all the markings of a crazy ride on Disney's Space Mountain. But when she returns, no one believes she's talked to an alien because her video camera contains only 18 minutes of static. Wouldn't you know it? But let's talk about Ellie. She is definitely an atheist, but not a pushy one. Her boyfriend, Palmer Joss, played by the handsome Matthew McConaughey, confronts her about her faith in science. After all, he has a Master of Divinity degree and is, as he points out, a man of the cloth without the cloth. She argues with Joss, saying that it is not true, as he writes in his newly published book, that science killed God. She tells her beau, what if science simply revealed he never existed in the first place? As Ellie continues to debate her point, she brings a scientific principle called Occam's razor to the table. This principle states that things being equal, the simplest explanation tends to be the right one. Ellie maintains the simple explanation that God doesn't exist at all and that we created him so we wouldn't have to feel so small and alone. When Josh said he couldn't see living without God, Ellie fires back, well, how do you know you're not deluding yourself? I mean, for me, I need proof. As the movie concludes, Joss defends her to the public, saying that although he has a different covenant than she has, their goal is the same, the pursuit of truth. And isn't that what Unitarian Universalists strive for? These cinematic portrayals of faith have entertained and inspired me, along with countless others during the years. And obviously, I've presented only a brief sampling of the many stories of faith depicted in the movies. I certainly should have included To Kill a Mockingbird, directed by Robert Mulligan and based on the 1960 Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Harper Lee. This excellent movie, which came out 2 years after the book's publication, portrays a faith in the equality and dignity of all men and women, regardless of racial differences. This black and white movie starring Gregory Peck always brings me to tears, tears of outrage, tears of hope. Now, at the end of this service, please feel free to share with us any movies about faith that have inspired you.